Record a short episode about a long movie.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we are talking about Dune Part 2, starring Zendaya and a bunch of other people that I didn't bother to look up, because it's very long. Very, very long.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Well, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Nick Glover.
Shai Halud.
And Molly Glover.
She sheds water for the dead.
Never a drop of rain on Arrakis. So we are here. We are here to talk about Dune Part 2. But really, I think both of the new Dune films. You know, Dune Part 1. We never did.
Did we talk about the first one?
I don't think we did an episode about the first one.
I thought we did.
Maybe we did. I mean, we've done a lot of episodes. So
yeah, we've done a lot of episodes.
But anyway, this is Dune Part 2. Dune Part 2
by Denis Villeneuve.
which it's been out for a little while, and we just all finally managed to watch it. Features, of course, Zendaya, who's in, as far as I can tell, everything.
Zendaya.
I don't know how she actually has a life outside of making movies at this
right?
point.
She's so busy.
And TV.
Yeah. And we've got Timothy Chalamet as Paul Atreides, the protagonist of the series.
He's the protagonist. Yeah. I wouldn't say he's the hero. He's the protagonist, for sure.
He's definitely something. And directed by Denis Villeneuve. Or however we pronounce it, I don't know. But Denis Villeneuve.
It's the Blondie song.
Yeah. I think this is actually an interesting movie to talk about because, you know, a huge, huge part of the Dune story is the Messiah story, and it's really about fundamentalism and using religion for power.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I think that plays a lot into what we theoretically do on this podcast. I should say we are going to spoil the shit out of it. If you don't want to know what happens in Dune Part 2, if you have not read the original Frank Herbert novels, then maybe you don't want to listen anymore. Maybe you want to go and watch Fallout. We talked about Fallout last week. I need to go watch Fallout. So maybe we should all do that together, except I can't. I've got to talk about Dune. So we're here to talk about Dune Part 2. Molly, Nick, we've all watched it.
Yes.
What are your initial thoughts?
The thing about the Villeneuve Dune movies is that they're gorgeous, they're huge, they're really faithful adaptations of the first novel Dune, which is the only one I've read. Nick has read more of them than I have, but I was looking forward to this a lot, but I feel like unfortunately my excitement for it kind of died down by the time it came out. It had just been so long
we didn't see it in the theater because we got a new puppy.
Right.
And so we waited for home release.
Even when it came out in the theater, I was like, yep.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when the first one came out, I was so like on the edge of my seat and I would have like killed to see the next part like right away. It was just so good. And I understand why they had to cut it into two parts, but I almost wish they had just filmed all of it and then released it. Maybe just 6 months apart or something like that. So they could have capitulated on that wave of excitement that for me, just kind of died down before it was time to see the second.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I wish they'd done a better job of timing the release of the second film. How about you, Nick?
Yeah. I mean, I agree with what Molly's saying. Like, it's absolutely gorgeous. It's the things they show are pretty faithful. The things they leave out are things I'm interested in, but aren't critical to the story really. I think everyone in it does a really good job. Mm-hmm. And I think that Maybe more so than the book, it really does hammer home that, like, hey, look, the people are using religion to manipulate you to go to war. Like me on a, I mean, I feel like it's obvious in the book, but yet I see people talking about the books who completely miss that fact. So maybe it's too subtle for some people, and the movie is a lot less subtle about it. I think that the sister Arya,
we haven't met yet.
Yeah, so, Arya. Hey. We don't even see in the movie. We just see her developing
her fetus.
We do see her presumably Anna Taylor-Joy is her future self.
The Emperor's daughter?
No, that's
Florence Pugh or Pooh.
Florence Pugh.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
I think Anna Taylor-Joy is shown as Arya speaking as her, you know, not in the womb and not from her mother speaking.
In the dream sequence when Paul drinks the water.
Right. Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, you know, magic drugs baby and magic drugs messiah can talk and whatnot. So I think that's who she's meant to be. I thought that was interesting and maybe less creepy than having a little toddler person with a gum jabbar running around and stabbing people and talking like this about their brother.
I want that. I think that's such an important part of it. Like the prescience of her being in this 1 or 2 year old body and speaking with the wisdom of the ages of all the Bene Gesserit, but
maybe better than the David Lynch version, which was just not effective. I think. Yeah. So, all right, I think the movie looks amazing. Just in terms of really capturing the aesthetic of Dune and what the novels kind of created. I remember going to the 1984 David Lynch. I was going to say Paul Lynch. I don't know why, but the 1984 David Lynch version of the film. My dad had read the books and he loved the books, and he was pretty disappointed in the movie because he felt like it wasn't terribly faithful to the books. And I didn't really know why at the time. And I think a lot of it comes from the fact that the books are not suggesting that Paul Atreides is a hero. Again, no. he's a protagonist. Yeah. He's a protagonist. Yeah. And the movie is very much like, no, Paul Atreides is the good guy. The Harkonnens are the bad guy. And at the end of the movie, when Paul Atreides wins, everybody's happy because the Kwisatz Haderach is a good thing if it's Paul Atreides, instead of the Kwisatz Haderach is bad no matter who it is. So I appreciated that. I thought that... You know, there is a real, and even Paul kind of senses that the direction that he's going is bad and he shouldn't go there. And so when he does, it's kind of a failure on his part
And he keeps saying things like, I'm not here to lead you. You're going to lead yourselves. I'm not here to save you. You're going to save yourselves. But at the same time, it's like, and this is something that always annoyed me a little bit in the book too, but it's like, cause it's so indicative of fantasy of the time, is that he rides the biggest sandworm and he speaks the language like faster than anyone ever has.
He knows your ways.
He knows their way. Yes. And he, you know, he's almost got the walking part down. She just shows him a little better way to do it, and then he gets it immediately, and like, just, he's just, it's a little Mary Sue. But that's how almost all science fiction was back then, really. Like every character was like the best at everything and like shocking all of the regular people with his ways, and so
I mean, he's literally the product of thousands of years of a Bene Gesserit program. So
yeah, but I feel like that gets glossed over a lot in the sense of it being like, no, Paul's special. And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, he's a fucking designer. Like Jessica makes him that way through the force of her will. And she decides she's going to have a son who's going to be the Kwisatz Haderach and all that. Like,
against the Bene Gesserit's will.
Yes.
Yeah. I think, so I've read through God Emperor of Dune. Dune Messiah, Children of Dune, and God Emperor, I think. Maybe mm-hmm, I've got, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's right. And I feel like each book is like, maybe I didn't make it clear that this isn't necessarily a good thing right. here, and that Paul isn't necessarily a good guy. It's kind of like each book hammering that home more and more. And David Lynch's Dune very much is like, oh, Paul, good guy. Yay, he wins, like you're saying, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this movie was a little bit more reluctant about it.
But yeah.
It still seemed to be really much like, you know, the Atreides are the good guys, the Harkonnen are the bad guys, which is kind of true.
I mean, just look at them. They look like extras in a 1990s Nine Inch Nails video. They're all very bad guys.
But that's, I mean, they did in the 84. They did in the 84 film, too. They looked like they were waiting for Nine Inch Nails to start making videos. but yeah, I mean, the Harkonnens are clearly not... You're not supposed to be rooting for the Harkonnens. I feel like you're supposed to be rooting for the Fremen, and the Fremen are just being manipulated by Paul, and Paul's mother. Paul's mother more than Paul. Jessica is I think
doing. Well, she's a Bene Gesserit.
Well, they also kind of force her into being their what is it? The wise woman,
Reverend Mother.
They're just kind of like, well, our Reverend Mother died, so and she's like, I don't. Well, too bad you are now. And so like that, like there's a lot of, I don't know. I think there's a lot to be said of, because there's a gender binary in this world. Sure. There's, as far as we know, there are not non-binary, characters.
They're certainly not represented. In the book or the series.
And so I think there's a lot of, you know, women and men clashing in terms of control, and obviously men are the ones in power and in control of everything. It's a patriarchy to some degree, with the Bene Gesserit pulling the strings secretly in the shadows in that way that women do, the power behind the throne.
It's a die.
But except that she doesn't get to be the, I mean, when she says no, they're just like, too bad.
She agrees to do it.
She says no at first, and they keep pushing her until she finally says fine. Like,
so, and a part of that is how much of that is, she's a Bene Gesserit. Why do they have these prophecies? Well, because the Bene Gesserit dissected all of the religions of the world and invented this custom tailored super religion that they could use to, you know, seed the control in every society as humanity expanded out into the universe. Right. So like, she's kind of, I don't know. She has a responsibility to do that for them, because her people are the reason they believe that anyway. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. It's, I mean,
they're not the good guys either.
The Bene Gesserit are in the world of Dune, probably more in control than anybody, right? They are, they just don't let anybody know except each other that they're the ones controlling everything. The Fremen are interesting in that, you know, just about everything else seems patriarchal, but the Fremen seem pretty, if not matriarchal, much more equal in terms of
egalitarian to some degree. Yeah. It seems to be a meritocracy in terms of who can survive.
Right.
Yeah. Like, and
The people that are fighting in the desert seem pretty balanced between men and women. It's whoever's good at it, is out there battling. So
I think the biggest problem I had with this is that it's like, I understand that it's part two, but it's been so long that it feels like a sequel. Yeah. I know it's not a sequel, and I know that, but it felt like the same movie again, because it's a continuation of the same story of the book. So it just felt like watching the same movie again, with all the like shocking, like, oh my God, the Fremen, they're draining all the blood from their body to use the water. And it's like, yeah, did you not see the first movie? They talk a lot about how important the water is. Like, you know, just so, I mean, I understand that it's a continuation, but so much of it to me felt like, it just felt like, nobody has learned anything in this film. And I understand. Sure. So I don't know. I really wish it had just been released quicker.
Can I make a quick observation that actually bugged me when you bring that up? At the very end of the film, sorry, spoiler alert, when the Fremen and Paul have destroyed the Harkonnen and the Emperor's Guard, and I'm forgetting their name at the moment, and they pile them onto these huge piles, and they set them on fire. And I'm like, the Fremen would not do that. They would take their water first. They would take the water of everybody they had killed before.
Didn't they say something about how they don't take the enemy's water because the enemies have poison water? They showed them taking their water, and they were like, they do this in the second movie. They're like, we take their water. Their water is only good for cleaning and waste. Like, our water is what we drip, we pour it. We put our water into the life pool that's like the place where everyone who's died's water goes. And like, enemies' bodies' water is used for cleaning. And I thought he said,
I don't know if that was an enemy thing or just a from corpses thing.
Because they took other corpses and put their water, they put it into those fancy vessels and poured those vessels into the life pond.
Yeah, that's true.
And so I think it was, and non-Fremen's water gets used for like utility. Mm-hmm. And Fremen water gets put into the giant place where we just hoard water and no one uses it, which I feel very weird about.
Especially considering that what stillsuits do is recycle all of your body's moisture, whether that's sweat, urine, or feces,
or tears,
and they reprocess it for you to consume again.
Yeah, you're just constantly
So that's Tim and when Molly and I were watching, they did some moment where they showed like Chani and Paul like looking like attractive and striking a pose in their still suits, or like exchanging like a romantic look or something. I just leaned over to Molly and I'm like, the feces is processed in the thigh pads.
But also, like, I don't know, is it? I don't remember there being, I mean, I'm sure it is. I don't remember there being a giant life pool in the book where they pour all the front water. And
there's a giant, the life pool.
The water
I think
that
is,
nobody would dare to drink.
It's
what?
It's, I kind of remember it. I think a part of it is attached to some of the Leto the Second shit that happens later.
So is that meant to be an analogy for religion in the sense that it's like their religion tells them they should take this, the most precious resource that they have on Arrakis, and just hoard it and no one gets to use it? I got a Catholic church. all that cold. Like, it just felt so like, give all your money to the church when you die so that the church can do nothing with it to help people.
Oh, that's legit.
And just hold on to it. I didn't remember it from the books. And I read Dune, I want to say like 5 years ago, right before the first one came out.
Yeah.
And so I don't remember that at all. So maybe it's just a throwaway line or something, but like, I was outraged at the sight of that pool. And it's like, how many children die of thirst every year on Arrakis? But there's this giant pool of water we don't touch.
Yeah, like, I'm trying to remember, Nick, because I think that they do use that pool, but they're also trying to they're trying to store up enough water for some reason.
I think
I'm gonna look it up
without them telling this is why. I think it ties into how spice is created, which they don't talk about in the first book or in these movies, and the connection between Shai-Hulud, the sandworms, and water and spice and sand trout, which are baby sandworms. That is not obvious. That's not obvious to most people at this point in the series. And how worms die when they touch water, and that is what causes spice to be released, and sand trout.
Seech
is like a hole. It's like the place, a town.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So it's the only time that they would not use, they're called death stills. The Dune Wiki says the only way in which someone's water would not be reclaimed through the death stills is if they were found something so guilty of something so heinous, their water was tainted. But I can't find anything so far about the giant pool of water that they don't use. Yeah.
You know, Tim, you'd asked Molly about you know, what she's looking for or something like that in the movie. And I think that, and we were talking about how the Bene Gesserit might be the most powerful and the Emperor's power and all that. You know who they didn't talk about like at all in either of these movies was the Spacing Guild.
They didn't. Chum. Yeah.
Not one bit. And I feel like that is some of the most interesting parts of the politics of Dune to me, are the fact that interstellar travel is done by the Spacing Guild, and they have to be whacked out of their fucking minds, mutated on spice in order to fold space to make that happen. And the Spacing Guild and the people that regulate the trade of spice have an exclusive monopoly over that. Frank Herbert actually wrote Chome to be a satirization of I just forgot it. The organization that's in OPEC.
Sure.
OPEC. And Arrakis is Iraq. Like, it's not subtle. It's about oil. The stuff that spices.
Yeah.
We need it to travel. We need it to, you know, wage war. It's political power. It's financial power. If you can destroy it, you can take it away from Western nations.
I consume it and it gives me visions.
Well, I puff it and I can see through time.
Yeah.
And so they don't really talk about the Mentats either, which.
Mm-mm. So they showed two Mentats in the first movie. And the Mentats are fucking. No, I take that back. They do show Mentats in the Harkonnen battle room.
They do.
Where there's like a holographic display and they're all like chugging away on their keyboards. Presumably, they are doing all the calculations to make those graphics shown, because computers are fucking illegal in Dune. You can't make machines that come close to thinking ever since the Butlerian Jihad, which they also don't talk about at all in the
right. Really talk about the history of the you know, the idea that all of these people are descendants of humans. This is you know, Earthlings that have gone into space, but some shit went down.
Yeah.
You know, because they don't use computers anymore.
The person fallen.
And
ultimately, like, I don't want to say I was disappointed. I had a good time the whole time I was watching it. But when I was watching the first one, I was fucking entranced.
Riveted.
Like, I was gasping at times as things happened. And so the worm, the thumpers were very cool. I really liked how they worked. I liked that they had I liked the way that they clicked them in. I liked the rhythm that they chose. You know, all of that stuff was a really strong directorial, or whoever made that choice. The way that they walked without rhythm was kind of stupid looking to me, but whatever. Like,
is there a way to do it that isn't going to look stupid?
I mean, I feel like just walking, but not just, you know, like walking, just not walking, like, you know, just doing a little side. They talk about it being a little side step, not a weird cha-cha slide dance with like now to the left, tick 2-3 times. Like, it just felt a little like they were doing like a weird, almost like a dance, and it just
cha-cha slide has rhythm, Molly. Well, I don't know.
Honestly, the way they were dancing had rhythm. Like, they were doing it in a way that, like, I was like, I was counting like 1, 2, 3, 4 as they were going. And it's like,
I feel like by definition, if they can do it in unison like that, then there's some sort of a rhythm or a
pattern. There has to be, doesn't there?
Right?
Thank you.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I think how much of that is just because the second half of Dune is kind of less interesting, because it's, you know, the Messiah leads the people and wins the war type of thing. I think some of the more interesting things about the ending were not done. I kind of thought it was interesting that like the Chani and the Princess Irulan and Paul thing was so much less interesting in the movie than it is in the books, because in the book he basically goes up to her and is like, hey, look, I'm gonna have to marry her so I can become emperor of everything, but don't worry, you're the real one. I will never have a child with her, and I will only have children with you because you're the one who I love. And I think by the end of the first book she's pregnant with Leto.
He doesn't even talk to the emperor's daughter in these movies. Like, they don't even nothing about that for him yet.
And in fact, Chani is not only agreeable to this idea, but it basically gets pitched to her as you're going to cuck the emperor's daughter. And she's like, rad. Like, fuck the emperor. That is awesome. I would live to insult her in this way. Like, she eventually gets super on board with it, I thought.
And yeah, it's interesting the way that it ends with Chani leaving him, which is not.
Yeah.
I mean, no. That's not in the books. Chani stays with him. Now, I mean, you understand why Chani leaves him, given the way, what they did with the character in this,
sure,
in this film. But yeah. It's interesting that they made that choice with Chani to take her that direction. It sure seems like they want to make the next movie.
It sounds like they're going to. And there's a TV show too, right?
I don't know about that.
On HBO, they're going to do like a Ben Gesserit show.
Oh, I hadn't heard of that. That might be more interesting.
I'm looking it up. A Dune Prophecy.
I mean, and honestly, Timothée Chalamet is an excellent Paul Atreides. He's young and whiny and moldable and great. I think all the casting has been so good. Really top to bottom. I can't think of a single role where I'm like, ugh, I wish they'd cast somebody else. Everybody was so good. The Austin Butler as Fane was so good. I was not.
You mean Fade?
He looked Fade. Yeah. He's the dude that played Elvis in the recent Elvis movie. That dude is fucking, he looked great. Like it's what a, I'm very pleased to see him take that this role as Fade and really make it his own. I thought it was really good. It's hard to, I think Sting has made that kind of iconic in the sense of its portrayal. And he did a good job of distancing himself from that portrayal of it, which is one of the few things anybody who's seen the David Lynch Dune movie might remember, even if they didn't remember anything else. Right.
Yeah. So the Dune Prophecy, which is supposed to premiere this year, late this year on Max, HBO Max, is at 10,000 years before Dune. Ooh. The series follows sisters Valya and Tula Harkonnen as they combat forces that threaten the future of humanity and establish the fabled sect known as the Bene Gesserit. So it's about the establishing of the Bene Gesserit order from the get-go 10,000 years ago. I believe that would be pre-Butlerian Jihad. So there'll be, you know, computers and maybe some AI threat on the horizon or something. Mm-hmm. That's interesting to me because if they do another Dune movie, if they do Dune Messiah, they can talk about how Paul has ancestral memory. And part of what makes Paul special is Bene Gesserit and Reverend Mothers, they have this ancestral memory unlocked by the water of life, this poisonous water.
What the fetus has and the baby.
They get to see their ancestral memory and their chromosomes, and being double Xers, they can only see half of their lineage in a sense, the double X havers perspective throughout. Paul, being born with an X and a Y chromosome, has access to both parts of his ancestral memory. That's what makes him, that's a part of what makes him special.
Yes, Frank Herbert, we get it. Men are better.
But if they do this thing that takes place 10,000 years before, there's no reason that everything they're doing and showing can't be something that Paul or Alia or Lady Jessica remember. And can have, you know, as something relevant. That's kind of interesting, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, I think.
Go ahead.
I think that'd be great. I think, you know, and I enjoyed the movie quite a bit as well. But, you know, it was kind of I wish I had seen it in the theater because it was so big and so spectacular. Mm-hmm. And seeing the sand just stretched out across the big screen would have been great.
We didn't see the first one in the theater either, though, because of the pandemic.
You're right.
Yeah.
So I wasn't really all that like worried about it. Right. We saw the first one at home as well.
I think you're right.
I know I'm right.
Interesting.
I don't think I saw the first one in the theater either, but
I don't think anybody did.
Yeah. Interesting. That was a big deal. It was a big deal that it was like the director was pissed about it too, because he makes money on the box office. I think it was open in the theaters, but it was very limited. Maybe I don't know.
I'm looking it up.
They didn't do the so they talk about Paul getting access to his family's atomics.
Yeah.
But they don't talk about Laz beams and shields and why the two should never mix, like mm-hmm. crossing the streams. Mm-hmm. If you hit a shield with a Laz cannon or laser beam or whatever, it has like an atomic explosion, like it's like a nuke going off. And that's how they breach the stone wall to attack Arakeen and kick off the battle with the Harkonnens at the end. Is like Paul busts through with an army of worms on one side, and on the other side they're like, fuck it, shoot the wall, like shoot the shield, make it happen, we'll do the thing that everyone says not to do, cross the streams.
It was released in theaters. Dune Part 1 was released in theaters, but it was theaters and streaming simultaneously the same night. It released this, and most people in October of 2021, a lot of people were, I mean, us included, we were not going to movies at that point. We had, that was so,
I might have gone to see it in the theater because I would go in the afternoon when basically nobody else was in the theater.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So I can't remember. I just know that watching it, I was like, I kind of wish I'd seen this in the theater. Because it really would have been a lot more impressive.
Tim, have you read Dune? Have you read any of the others?
I've read Dune, but I haven't read the others.
Okay. So like, I think Messiah is, Paul is blinded by atomics going off at some point. And everyone thinks he's dead and he's wandering the desert as this, you know, blind prophet guy. And people are like, is it Paul? It's not Paul. It's fucking Paul. It's obvious it's Paul. And I think maybe that's Children of Dune. I don't remember, but he and Chani have their first kid.
She becomes pregnant in Dune Messiah.
Oh, does she?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. With Leto the second part one. And then Leto the second part two is the child that survives later that becomes God Emperor of Dune. That's the thing, is that like Paul's the Messiah, but he's not the God Emperor. The God Emperor is his son Leto the second, who becomes the human worm spice god hybrid.
It's because Chani, I'm just reading this. Chani gives birth to twins who come into the world fully conscious with Kwisatz Haderach like access to ancestral memories. The son is a surprise for Paul, who had only foreseen the birth of their daughter. So it's like a bonus baby that they weren't expecting. And that is Leto. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. The first Leto.
That is the twins are named Leto and Ganina.
Right. And I think Leto dies and then he has a second son named Leto later. I think
the twins are I don't know.
Maybe they're the children of Dune. So,
yeah.
Anyway, I think we all agree that we liked it and that it was very pretty and well performed.
And I agree. And I think actually the thing that, and we haven't talked too much about it, but I really appreciated the fact that, boy, fundamentalism and religion did not get, were not shown in a good light. You know,
no.
What Jessica's doing is manipulating people, and she knows it. She knows she's using religion to manipulate people.
Admits it.
Yeah, admits it. And Paul knows that she's doing it and is trying to resist it, and in the end has no choice but to effectively submit to it and become the tool of that religion and use that religion to exert control.
Here's the question is, do people see that who aren't atheists? Do people see that and draw comparisons to their own religion, or do they see it and go, see, that's the problem with those other religions. They all do shit like this all the time.
Oh, I bet the latter,
you know,
I'll bet
it's a desert religion. We all know those are a problem, guys.
Oh yeah. I bet everybody I would bet most fundamentalist religions would watch this and see other fundamentalist religions in mm-hmm. it and not their mm-hmm. own.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's always the problem.
Which is funny because it's like Zen Sunni Catholicism based on the Orange Catholic Bible that is like the basis of the whole like Bene Gesserit religion that they're spreading with the promise of the Messiah and the Kwisatz Haderach one day. Mm-hmm, like,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's like, everyone's like, oh, it's desert people. It's, you know, they're probably assuming if it's any religion, like you're saying, it's Islam. Yeah. But
guess what? They all started in the desert.
Yeah. Guess what? Guess what? Same God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and the Bene Gesserit, they kind of tailor make the religion a little bit to the people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like,
yeah,
we're going to keep the same, base, but this community, we're going to need to tell the stories in this way.
It's in order like to get them. Christianity.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It really
has the biggest draws to that, and the way that Christianity is slightly different all over the world.
It's
like there's Christians in Korea, and there's Christians in Ghana, and there's Christians in Nigeria, and there's Christians in Utah, and like they're all a little different. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah, I thought it was. I'm glad I saw it. How's that? I'm glad I saw the movie. I think certainly visually they do a great job. They do a better job adapting the story in terms of understanding that Paul Atreides is not a hero. That that what's happening to the Fremen is not a good thing. And that ultimately, while maybe Paul is better than the Harkonnens, that's by a matter of degree rather than...
I will say, when I said at the top that I felt it was a faithful adaptation, I guess I should really specify, I meant in look and feel. Like it looked like what I imagined things looked like in the books. It felt like the book come to life.
Yeah.
Did it feel like the plot of the book come to life? Maybe not necessarily, but it really did feel like the characters, the way that the costumes, the sets, the fucking the dragonfly wing helicopter thing, the ornithopters. Thank you. The ornithopters, the worms, the massive fucking worm hooks, the thumpers, like all that stuff all really felt like what I thought it was described as. And so if the plot didn't quite get there faithfully, at least it looked right.
Yeah.
And we haven't even mentioned the worm sex popcorn buckets. So that's something.
That's right.
I don't know if it's a rumor and good internet memes or if it's real. I've seen too many sources saying that there's going to be a Deadpool popcorn bucket that is purposefully suggestive.
Oh, yeah. I thought that was
on that cultural phenomenon. Right. Yeah.
I thought that was a joke. I thought that was like a parody thing.
It may, how's this? It would not surprise me if it became a reality because Ryan Reynolds saw the joke meme and was like, holy shit, can we? Because he's an executive producer on it. And I could see him being like, get me on the horn with AMC.
How much would it cost to make these? Not that much. Let's do it. Right? Let's do it.
Yeah. Exactly.
You can take it out of my cut. Let's go. I can see that happening. All right. Well, check out Dune. It's going to be streaming. Yeah. It's going to be streaming, I think, on most somewhere pretty soon.
Like for free. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can rent it now.
You can rent it now, but it'll be streaming for free. And I think I would, if you've got the time, I would watch 1 and 2 back to back. I really would.
Yeah. Make an evening of it.
But we've been Geeks Without God. If you enjoyed what you heard, you can always support us on Patreon. Just go there, drop a couple of bucks. You can listen to episodes early if you are a Patreon supporter. Otherwise, we're going to be back next week. We're going to talk about something else. It's going to be exciting, and you're going to want to hear it. So we'll catch you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Messiahs, ruining shit for everybody since literally forever.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
It takes so long to explain.